Shmuel Beis, Perek Tesvov. Avshalom was in Geshur for 2 years, and finally Yoav, we learned in the last Perek, Yoav had a woman come, a wise woman from Tekoa, and she told David HaMelech a whole story about how she had two sons, and one killed the other, and with the whole story, David decided that that other boy should be left alive, and that was a mushel, it was a story referring to his two sons. Avshalom had killed Amnon, and David should now bring back that son Avshalom. That was in Perek Yudalad. So Avshalom was brought back to Yerushalayim, and for 2 years he didn't see David. He went back to his house, and David didn't want to see him. And finally, Avshalom couldn't take it any longer. And he burned down, he had the field of Yoav burned down to get Yoav's attention. Yoav was ignoring him. And he told Yoav, what's the point of bringing me to Yerushalayim if David doesn't even want to look at me? For 2 years he was there and his father didn't want to see him. And everyone knew that David didn't want to see Avshalom. It was a public humiliation. And at that point, Yoav came to the king in the last pasuk in Perek Yudalad. Yoav came to the king and he told him, "Vayikra al Avshalom." And David finally called Avshalom, and Avshalom came to the king and he bowed down. "Vayishak haMelech la Avshalom," and the king kissed Avshalom. As with many things, it's hard to know exactly the. When David kissed Avshalom, what was David thinking at this point? Did David still have this resentment and this rejection of Avshalom, but he felt he had to bring him back and something was going to happen and Avshalom was going to do something? Avshalom just had to see David. So it could be just David kissed Avshalom because he was aware of, he didn't really feel a closeness to him, but he felt he had to do something. Or could be he was able to be miskaber, perhaps he was overcoming his emotions and he realized his role as a father and as a king, whatever, he just had to kiss Avshalom even though he didn't feel it. But it's of note that it says, Vayishak haMelech le'Avshalom. Ibn Ezra, Rav Avram Ibn Ezra, points out in Chumash, when it says Yaakov kissed Rachel when he first met her, it wasn't like Chas v'Shalom, all the romantics think, you know, the wrong shot in the Pasuk. Stami was, she was beautiful, whatever. In the words of the Pasuk, you can see that Yaakov had a different intention. Because it says, Vayishak Yaakov li'Rachel. He kissed to Rachel. And Ibn Ezra points out that in Lashon HaKodesh, if the two people are kissing, it would just say, Vayishak Yaakov Rachel. Yaakov kissed Rachel. Vayishak Yaakov li'Rachel, is he gave a kiss to Rachel, it implies that it wasn't a kiss of closeness, it was more of respect and concern and caring, and it was his cousin, but it wasn't the type of, it was a more formal type of kiss. Well, you know, it's two people get together at certain occasions at a simcha. A kiss is the type of thing which is normal. It doesn't mean that person necessarily has that feeling, but it's like among men, you very often have a handshake. The situation warranted a kiss. Vayishak Yaakov li'Rachel, he kissed to Rachel. Over here, it's the same thing. Vayishak haMelech le'Avshalom. The king kissed Avshalom, but he kissed to Avshalom. It implies there was perhaps not, the king still didn't feel this closeness. There was a very respectful type of gesture that he had to do, and it doesn't say that he discussed or he talked or he said anything to Avshalom. He gave him this kiss. Perek Tesvov. And now begins another difficult chapter. It's one nisayon after another that David HaMelech is going through now. After the incident of Bathsheba, he's being given one punishment after another. And now his son Avshalom is going to rebel. Vayihi me'achri chayin, it was afterwards, after what just happened, vayaslo Avshalom, Avshalom made for himself merkava, a chariot, v'susim and horses, V'chamishim ish rotzim ofanav, and 50 men should go running in front of him as a king, as an important person. He has 50 runners. Rashi brings down that kulam netulei techol. They had their spleen removed, v'chakuke kapos raglayim, and they scraped out the bottom of their feet. I don't know if it means they scraped out the nerves or something like that, but they were able to run and run and run, and their feet didn't hurt them. And as they just, I guess they probably deadened their sensation. It could be removing the spleen also. You know, nowadays the athletes sometimes take hormones. You know, I don't know what the runners did in those days. But he had, Avshalom had these runners, and they were professional runners, these 50 men. And this is going to be the beginning of his revolt. And the Mefarshim discussed that Barbanel goes into detail why now it happened. Why it happened now? If anything, I would have imagined for 2 years he was in Geshur. For 2 years he came back to Yerushalayim and the king didn't see him. And finally David HaMelech comes to him. David HaMelech invites him and gives him an audience and kisses him. And now he goes and rebels. If he waited so long, like now when things are first, the ice is starting to thaw and they're getting a warming relationship. Now he rebels. But it could be there was a number of motives behind this. It could be Avshalom, first of all, felt the people would never accept him until this moment. Even if Vayishak HaMelech Avshalom, even if the kiss wasn't with the sincere emotions and it was more of a show and it was a sign of respect and David didn't really care for him. In the eyes of the people, remember Avshalom was the oldest son who was still alive. And Avshalom was almost, it was in his 30s. He was in his 30s already. He was old enough to be king. Shlomo HaMelech was still a boy. When he became king, he wasn't bar mitzvah. No, he was much younger. Avshalom was the one who could be viewed as a possible heir to the monarchy. And yet, David obviously made it clear that Avshalom is not even a consideration. Till now. Once he finally invited Avshalom and he gave him a kiss, it could be interpreted as if David is ready to let life go on. Well, we're going to put the tragic episode behind us. And right now Avshalom is again found favor by the king. And David is considering treating Avshalom. Perhaps he could be the next king. And perhaps even Avshalom himself wasn't, in the Pesukim he's portrayed as a terrible rishis. And as he rebelled against David HaMelech, it sounds like he's terrible. The Gemara Taka says when he was killed, he was like in the lowest levels of Gehenna. And yet you find the people went with Avshalom. He was able to draw the people, which as we mentioned, could be he was just a smooth talker, but it would seem there's more to it if he was able to get Klal Yisrael to go with him. So on one hand, he was able to draw the people, and it was so, David HaMelech davened for him. After he died, we're going to see how David HaMelech davened, and he davened, and we'll see in Chazal, David HaMelech kept on bringing him up from one level of Gehenna to the higher one, until he finally got him into Gan Eden. But like, what exactly is, how do we understand Avshalom? Was he so bad? How did people follow him? David davened for him. It could be he really was so bad, but it could be it was mixed with another motive, and it's not clear, for instance, that Avshalom planned to kill David. If this would have been a successful revolt, would he have killed David HaMelech? Maybe he just wanted to make himself king, as many kings were made kings in the life of their father, even Shlomo HaMelech. David made Shlomo the king before he died. So perhaps Avshalom felt if he would be accepted by the people as king, he would become the acting king, and David HaMelech would be the king emeritus. He would continue, he's the official king, but Avshalom would be running the country. Could be he didn't realize that David is going to run away and then it would lead to a war. But whatever the case is, he definitely didn't want to take over the Malchus. He wanted to be the king without David's consent. But exactly how bad he is and how things, what he was thinking is not that clear. But Vayimei Achri Chayim, it was after this
It's sort of, you know, it can be a popular king like David HaMelech, who before he was even king, they went down and they were singing in front of him, and the people loved him, and they realized he was the one who brought them so much hatzlacha, and he was, David HaMelech was recognized by the people to be so great. And yet there's almost no job security. He made one, he had this incident with Bathsheba, it could be the people knew about it, they didn't know about it, some knew about it, whatever happened, and from now on, it's just all of a sudden, in a moment, he's at risk for his life. Could be Avshalom is out to kill him. It was after this, Vayasla Avshalom Merkava V'susin, whether it was after David HaMelech showed him this friendship, or after he saw that with his plea to be close with David, it was still a cold kiss. It could be he still realized that David would just never really accept him. But it was after this, Vayaslo Avshalom Merkava V'susim, he made himself a chariot and horses. V'chamishim ish rotzim lafonov, and he had 50 men running in front of him. Shlomo, of course, had another strike, which was Shlomo HaMelech's mother was Bathsheba. Which was that whole incident with David originally taking Bathsheba. Those who knew about it and aware of it certainly blamed David, and we'll see later on, they cursed David in the worst ways because they felt that what he did was terribly wrong, even though he had legal justification. But it was a mistake, and Shlomo HaMelech was her son. Avshalom came with a regular yichus. He had a Jewish mother, Noam HaYisraelis. He was better off than Amnon. Amnon's mother wasn't of Jewish, from a Jewish birth. The Medrash says in the beginning of Sefer Shmos, this is an example, it makes the point of, if a parent doesn't correct the child, this is what can happen. In other words, Avshalom made a Merkava V'susim, and he had 50 men running in front of him. And David HaMelech didn't do anything. We can assume he was aware of it, but if he wasn't aware of it, that's probably also part of the taina of Chazal, that the father should be aware of it. But certainly I would assume if he set up a chariot and horses like this, David would have been aware of it, and David let it go. Maybe he was just doing it for his covet, his gaiva. He wanted to have this type of display. He didn't say that he was a king or anything at the moment. He just was acting in a royal manner, and David didn't do anything. It could be David was Isaac B'Tayra. You know, he was one of the Gedolei Yisrael. The Messiah goes through David HaMelech. Of Rebbe to Talmud. The Messiah of Tayra goes through David HaMelech. And David could be was Isaac in Tefillah. And he was Isaac in Tshuva. And he was preparing things for the Beis HaMikdash. But there was so much going on in his personal life and so many other things that he was involved with. Chazal, in the beginning, in the Medrash, take David to task that for Avshalom, and we'll see later on Adoniyo, David HaMelech didn't seem to enforce and correct what his children were doing. Perhaps he felt as a role model would be sufficient. Whatever David HaMelech's points were, Chazal say we should take the lesson too, that a parent should keep a handle on what his children are doing. So he had the chariot, and he had his 50 runners, going in front of him. V'hishkim Avshalom. Avshalom would get up early. V'omar and he stood al yad derech hashar, next to the road that led to the gates of the city. The Sanhedrin, the Bezdin, would always stay by the gate. Shoftim v'shoitrim titan l'chol v'chol shorecha. In all your cities, but they usually stayed by the gates where people came in and out, that they were readily accessible. As you're coming into the city, there must have been a room on the side where you can go in for Bezdin. Avshalom got up early, and he stood al yad derech hashor by the entrance to the gate. Vayhi kol ha'ish asher yelo riv, and it was anybody who had some type of argument. Lovo el hamelech, and he wanted to come to the king, la mishpat for justice. Vayikra Avshalom elov, Avshalom would call out to that person, vayomer, and he said, Emi ze irata, which city are you from? Vayomer, and the person would say, Me'achad Shivta Yisrael Avdecha, from one of the Shvatim, one of the tribes of Klal Yisrael, that's where your servant comes from. this is, we're now going to see exactly how the rebellion of Avshalom evolved. It started off, he showed three things that would help him become the king. He showed that he had a love for the people. The second thing is he had a love for justice, and he had a humility, an anivus, a humble person. He was a humble person. On one hand, he had the chariot and the horses. He wanted to show that he could fill the role of the king. But we'll see how, on the other hand, he acted very humble and very down to earth. First thing is he showed the concern he had for the people. He got up early, standing by the road, waiting for people who are in need of help. People are looking for justice. They're coming into Yerushalayim. Could be they weren't happy with their local Beis Din, and they felt they had something so important they had to get to the king. Like we had the woman from Tekoa, who was able to get an audience with the king. So he got up early, spent the full day working the crowds, and he was there early in the morning by the gate asking everybody what they need, what the problem is. And he would ask them where they're from. He took a personal interest. Which city are you from? Vayomre love Avshalom. And then Avshalom would say to the person, Re'ei dvarecha toivim unechoichim. See your words, that they're so good and so proper. V'shomea ein lecha mi'eis ha-melech. And that could be translated, V'shomea ein lecha mi'eis ha-melech. There's nobody who will understand you from the king. I understand exactly what you're saying. But if you go into David HaMelech, he won't understand what you're going through. Now, of course, to say such a thing itself is a moreh b'malchus. How can you say that? That's rebellion against the king. To say David HaMelech won't understand you. You're speaking against David. The word v'shomea could also mean you won't be able to get an audience. Like Shema. Shema can mean to understand. Shema can mean to hear, to listen. V'shomea ein lecha mi'eis ha-melech. Could be Avshalom was just telling him, things are very busy. David HaMelech is very involved. There's a lot of people who would like to speak to him. You won't be able to get an audience. And it could be if he was saying this to everybody, the word got back to David that Avshalom said this. And for all we know, David might have been happy. Avshalom went and he told the people, the king is very busy, he doesn't have time for you. But I see that your case is correctly, maybe I could help you out. So the words v'shomea can mean the king won't understand you. It could also mean the king won't hear you because he doesn't have time. And it's not necessarily negative. It could be it's just the fact that it's hard to get into the king. Your words, it could also mean re'ed v'recha tovim v'nechochim. You should see to it that your words are presented good and proper. There's a basis for your case. You just have to know how to present it. And nobody from the king will understand it with the right way that it should be presented. But I hear what you're saying, and I'm willing to work with you, and I like to see, I know that you're correct, and I like to see that justice is done. And he showed that he had a love for the emes and for mishpat, for justice. Vayomer Avshalom. And Avshalom said, Mi simenu shofet ba'aret. Who would make me the judge in the land? I just wish somebody would give me the opportunity to be the judge. Va'alai yavo chalish. And to me, everyone could come, asher yelo riv, whether he has an argument, umishpat. Sometimes two people have an argument, they're both not right, but when he told the people, if the person has a reeve, he has an argument, umishpat, and the justice is on his side, he's correct, v'itztaktiv, I would see to it that he's vindicated and he's the one who comes out righteous in the trial. He's the one who will win the case. Of course, everyone he spoke to personally, he would tell them, Re'ei dvarecha tovim u'nechochim. I see that your words are correct and you're the right one. But his general thing was, he said, yeah, anybody who's, if the justice is on his side, I would help him out. I just wish somebody would make me the judge. As if to say he's not interested in being king, even though he's the oldest son of David. He just wants to have a chance to help out the people. Anybody who has an argument, if he's correct, I'll help him out. And he can come directly to me. I'll see to it to be accessible. I'll be the judge and just the judge. My whole job will be to help out the community, and they'll be able to come directly to me. And it could also mean, the word is not ve'elai. Elai would actually mean to me. Ve'elai yovo kolish. Everyone could come to me. The word ve'olai is like, if he has an argument on me, if there's a case against me, he can also come. And if he's correct, I'll make him correct. Anyone can come with any tinas they have to me, any arguments, and I'll see to it that if they're right, I'm not interested in harming anyone. I just want to help everyone out. And they can come to me with their personal arguments, even if it's against me, and I'll make them correct. He asked the people where they were from in Pasuk Beis. And the person would very often say, Me'achad Shivte Yisrael Avdech. I'm from one of the Shvatim in Klal Yisrael. It could be what Avshalom was saying was, Yushamei Ein Lechom Yis HaMelech. You're not going to get an audience from the king. Because David is closest with Shevet Yehuda. He was a king over Yehuda for a number of years before all of Klal Yisrael accepted him. For 7 years. And he's very close with his Shevet. And if you're coming to the king and you're from a different Shevet, Me'achad Shivte Yisrael, you're not going to get an audience with the king. But if you come to me, even if you have an argument against me, I am interested in just that the right thing should be done, and if you come, even if it's an argument against me, I'll see to it that you're right. You don't have to worry about any favoritism, not to myself or my family or my shevet. I'm going to be totally fair. It's brought down in Choshen Mishpat and Simin Tesvov. If you're a judge, and two people come before you for the case, and you just, something doesn't feel right, you can sense that the person is a Rama, he's deceitful. And it's hard to exactly know, this person is a cunning person, and he seems to have worked out everything, and you can't catch him, his argument is flawless, but something just bothers you, it doesn't seem like he's telling the truth, there's something fishy, something's wrong. So it's brought down in halacha that if it's the toveya, the litigant who is trying to collect money, the one who's bringing this court case, if he's the guy that the judge suspects, the judge can just say, I don't feel capable of judging this, go to somebody else. Or the judge should not give a decision if he doesn't feel comfortable that what he's saying is correct. He can just withdraw. On the other hand, sometimes a person comes with a legitimate argument, and the defendant is the one who seems that he's not being upfront. The judge suspects the defendant of doing something dishonest. In a case like that, the judge can't pull back from the case. Because the person, the toveya, the one who brought this case, needs to have his case heard, and the decision should be decided. And you can't just say, well, something's wrong, I'm not going to decide it. After all, it's the defendant over here that we suspect of wrongdoing. In that case, if the person, not everyone can do this, it's a yochid bedoyro, if he's a special judge, like one in a generation, the judge of the generation, has a certain leniency, that if he feels the defendant is not being honest, he can make the defendant swear, he can make him pay. He has a certain authority to do things, take extra legal measures, where he feels that justice has to be done. He just has an umdana, he has this assumption that's borrower, it's clear to him. If he's clear that the defendant is lying or something's wrong, not every judge can do this, not every bezdin, but there are the yochid bedora, the special judge that's appointed. There is somebody you can appeal to if you feel your defendant is not being honest. Avshalom wanted to have that authority, I just wish I was me, Simeni Shofet Baretz. I should be the judge that everyone can come to me and I can make the innocent person correct. Everyone will, justice will be served. V'hoya bikrovish. Posake. V'hoya bikrovish. It would be when a person would come near Lishtachvoslo to bow down to Avshalom. And now we're going to see that third thing. We see his love for the people and his love for justice. And now we're going to see his humility. V'hoya bikrovish Lishtachvoslo. When a person would come near to bow down to him, v'sholach es yodo, he'd extend his hands, v'hefzikbo, and he'd grab a hold of the person, lift them up, v'noshaklo, and he'd give him a kiss. What, they're bowing down to me? We're brothers, we're friends. And he lifted the guy up, he didn't want anybody bowing down to him, and he gave him a kiss. That's wrong. Lehalacha, that's not allowed, certainly if he's a judge. If he's a judge, the judge is not allowed to hear one case without hearing the other side, if he's expecting to judge this. And here he's, Avshalom is setting himself up to be the judge and to decide these cases. And normally a judge in general, the rule is, Uchsheyeh Balei Din Lefanecha Yiyu Beinecha Kirishoyim. The judge can't be done people Lekav Zechus when he's got the two parties in front of him. After he's given his decision and they've accepted it, then of course he looks at them, Yiyu Beinecha Kizakoyim Kishakivu Aleim Es Adin, as it says in Pirkei Avos. But when the people are in front of him, the judge can't be at all naive, and he's got to look at everybody and assume they have the worst intentions, and his mind think they may be up to the terrible plots and motives, and he's dealing with Rishoyim. And Avshalom was the opposite. In his chanifus, and his flattery, and his trying to win the people on his side, he would go ahead and kiss them and assure them that they're correct, and he would just wish he could help them out. And in doing so, this is usher for a judge to act this way. But Avshalom was gradually winning over the people. They looked at him and they said, ah, he's such an anav, such a humble person. He's one of us. On one hand, we can see that he's fit to be the king. He can play the role of royalty. But he doesn't even want that. He just wants to be a judge to see that there's justice. And he loves us and he cares for us. He's one of the people. Vayas Avshalom, kadover hazeh l'chol Yisrael. Avshalom did this for all of Kal Yisrael. Asher yavoh la'mishpat el ha-melech. Everyone who came for justice to the king. This was Avshalom's approach. A guy came to the king, to David ha-melech. He wanted justice. Avshalom would tell him this. Vayiganev Avshalom, a slave anshe Yisrael. Avshalom like stole away, like a geneva. He stole the hearts of Kal Yisrael. Meaning he won them over, but this is what is called Gedevas Das. You're fooling somebody, it's like you're stealing their knowledge. You're fooling them that they think of you one way, and it's all not true. The people, you're asking the people knew that he was just appointed. In other words, he wasn't appointed. The people assumed that he really meant it, and this is the way he was. But as we're going to see in the way the Navi portrays it, this is all part of a plot to overthrow David HaMelech and to take over the throne. That's the way it simply seems to be. So he's presenting himself in a certain light, which is false. This is the person who's out to be king. So he stole a slave Anshe Yisrael, the heart of the people of Klal Yisrael. The obvious Genevas Das is, besides as we just mentioned, he wanted to take over the throne. He said this to everyone. Meaning, if Reuven and Shimon had a Din Torah, he would meet Reuven and tell Reuven, you're right and you'll win the case. And then he would say the exact same thing to Shimon. When Shimon comes down the road a little later, he would tell the same thing to Shimon, you're right! You're right, and the other guy's also right. And even though that's not possible, that's also right. And as everyone was right, and he won over the heart of the people. It was at the end of 40 years. And now the rebellion is going to pick up steam. It's not 40 years after the last pasuk. This is right afterwards. It's 40 years. The Gemara says, there's a Gemara in Tzmura, on Daf Tesvav, Rashi and Tosis is a long sugi over there. Chazal learned it was at the end of 40 years from when Klal Yisrael asked for a king. They asked Shmuel Hanavi that they wanted to have a king, and it was they rejected Shmuel. 40 years later, it's as if Klal Yisrael got their punishment that they saw what happened with a king. You asked for a king, you rejected Shmuel, perhaps they felt Shmuel was old and they didn't want him to, they didn't feel he was fit to serve anymore and they weren't happy with the sons that would have taken over. Now that's exactly what happens with David. Avshalom is going to rebel against David. We'll see, feeling that David is old and David, the son that David might choose, that David will choose, that son isn't fit. So again, it's just like they didn't like Shmuel, he was old, they didn't want his sons to take over. The people of Shalom is going to rebel against David, feeling he's old, and the heir apparent to the throne is not worthy. Labar Benel learns Poshet that Vahimi Ketzar Boim Shon at the end of 40 years. The 40 years could be going from when David became king, or when Avshalom was born. It was all around the same time. And the truth is, all of these dates are basically the same time. The people asked for a king. Shaul was only a king, Pashat the Gemara says, for 2 years. And it was a half a year he was a king. With Shmuel, it was only a few years. Between when they asked for a king, to when David became a king, to when Avshalom was born. The whole thing was a short amount of time. Miketzar Boim Shana could mean it was in that 40th, it was in the decade of the last decade. Like it says, Miket Sheva Shonim Tasa Shemitah. It doesn't mean after 7 years make a Shemitah. It means Miket Sheva Shonim, you have a period of 7 years, at the end of that period, you should make a Shemitah. Miket Sarvayim Shonim means it was in that last decade, close to 40 years from when David became king, close to 40 years from when Avshalom was born, and now Vayomer Avshalom is going to start putting the process in place to rebel. After 40 years, David HaMelech is nearing 70. He's nearing the end of his life. At this point, David already is getting older. He is a Zaken. It is, the people are feeling that it's a new king has to be chosen soon. And Avshalom is also nearing the age of 40. Ben Arboim Labina, at 40 comes a greater understanding. And Abar Benel seems to discuss that as being the prime of one's life. That a person's able to accomplish and to do and to understand, and it's an ideal time. While David is already doesn't have the strength, he's already older. And Shlomo HaMelech is still a boy. So Vayhi Miketzar Boim Shona, at the end of the 40 years, Vayomer Avshalom El HaMelech, Avshalom said to the king, Elchana, let me go now, Vashalim Es Nidri, and I want to pay up a neder. I made a vow, Asher Nadarti LaHashem B'Chevron, I made a neder to Hashem, and I'd like to pay up this neder in Chevron. In Chevron they must have had a boma, an altar. And over there, he'd like to bring a carbon. He made a neder, nedore l'Hashem Hashalim. He wants to pay up the nedorim that he made to Hashem. And he'd like to do this in Chevron. Ki neder nodar avdecha. Your servant made a neder, made a vow, b'shivti b'geshur. When I was living in Geshur, Ba'aram, which was part of the country of Aram, among the Goyim, and I made a neder, lemor saying, Im Yoshuv Yeshiveni Hashem Yerushalayim, if Hashem will bring me back to Yerushalayim, v'avadati es Hashem, and I'll serve Hashem. Could be this neder is perhaps to become a nazir. As we know, he was a nazir. Perhaps he was a nazir way before that, and this was just a different neder that he made. But he said he made a neder to serve Hashem, and I'd like to go now and to do this in Chevron. Simply, he would have gone to Chevron. The Gemara discusses this in Tzmura. The sheep were very good in Hebron. Hebron is a rocky, hilly place. It wasn't used so much for agriculture. But as Rashi brings in Chumash, it was a Beis HaKvaros. People were buried there. Like the Ovos HaKadoshim were buried in Hebron. It was a rocky terrain. But it was also good for raising sheep. So for the sheep, he had a neder, and therefore he would go to Hebron to get sheep. But it's mashma not just that he wanted to bring sheep from Hebron, but as the Gemara said, he actually was going to bring the korban in Hebron. Now, the fact that he's gathering everyone together for this korban, we're going to see he's going to try to make it into a rebellion. But if it fails and it's a flop, he can always tell David, I went to Hebron to bring korbanos. And I didn't realize the people loved me so much and made me the king, and I didn't really want to do it. That wasn't my intention. So he asked the king permission. He said why he's going to bring a korban, and we can be sure that he was going to bring a korban. But at the same time, he was working on a different agenda. I would like to go to Hebron. Hebron would be ideal for him in order to make a revolt. First of all, Hebron was the capital city for 7 years when David was there. Later on, David went to Yerushalayim. But if somebody were to look for the sister city, the other capital in Eretz Yisrael, Hebron had served as David HaMelech's capital. So he was going there to Hebron to start again, that he'll be the next king. And again, could be he presented it to the people that he would just like to be their king and to help them out. And not that he would do anything to David, just David's not able to deal with all of the details and everything that a king has to do. David's not up to doing that anymore. And therefore, he, Avshalom, will be the king. And of course, David will be the emeritus and David will be the figurehead, but he'll be the king also. But he's going to do it in Hebron. In Hebron, he can draw Shevet Yehuda after him. In other words, Malchus based David was always the power base was from Shevet Yehuda, and the rest of Klal Yisrael accepted David. But the base was really in Yehuda. So to make sure that he would become the king after David, he had to consolidate himself within Shevet Yehuda. So he went to Hebron. And he went to Hebron where they had a bama, and he would tell David he's going there, and it's also a distance from Yerushalayim. He has a bit of time that he can work out how this is going to evolve. He's not right under David HaMelech's scrutiny. So he went to Hebron. Vayomer lo HaMelech. The king said to him, Lech b'shalom, go in peace. David HaMelech probably had in mind, he sent Avshalom on a previous occasion, a few years previously. And he said to Avshalom, he can go when he's shearing the sheep. And over there, Amnon went along. And Avshalom killed Amnon. And then that whole tragedy happened. He should go in peace. This should be a successful trip. Lech b'shalom. But as the Gemara points out in the end of Brachas and elsewhere, Lech b'shalom is a term that is used, we say, to a nifter, somebody who died, he should go in peace. A person accomplished whatever he did in this world, and then when he's nifter, he goes in peace, and he goes to his eternal reward. A living person doesn't go in peace. We're not going in peace. We're going lech lishalom, go to peace. We still have to reach our goal. We have a lot more to accomplish. We have a lot more to do. And again, even if a person is not physically able to do, but a person, certainly if he can think, there's a lot that he can do. The main thing is a person should have his thoughts, what he wants to do, and what's important. And even if he doesn't have that, the neshama has whatever cheshbonos Hashem sometimes wants the person, he still has more to accomplish. Sometimes, sad to say, the only thing he's accomplishing is suffering. But that's also an accomplishment. Hashem has his cheshbonos. But there's as long as a person is alive, he's lech lishalom. He's going to peace. He hasn't reached it yet. He's got stuff he's got to accomplish. But David HaMelech said to him, "Vayomer lo HaMelech lech bishalom, go in peace." And we'll see. It turned out that Avshalom ended up being killed. But Vayokom Vayelech Hebronah, Avshalom got up and he went to Hebron. Vayishlach Avshalom Raglim. Avshalom sent out spies. B'chol Shivta Yisrael, throughout all of the tribes, all of the Shvatim and Klal Yisrael, Lamor saying, Kishamachem is kol ha-shofar. When you hear the blast of the shofar, you hear the shofar call, Vamartam, you should all proclaim, Molach Avshalom b'Chevron, Avshalom is ruling in Hebron. Now, what he did was, he sent out meraglim. There were no posters around town. They were like spies. A meraglim is like spies. He sent out meraglim with this information. What he basically did was, he sent people throughout the country to try to feel out the sentiment, feel out which people would be loyal to Avshalom, who would be willing to back him. And the meraglim would confide. If they saw they had a receptive audience, and this person would listen to them, they told them, Avshalom is going to become king, and when he's king, you're with us. And you should get up and stand with us and say that Avshalom is the king. And of course, if these spies went, and they saw who was not a receptive audience, and the people wouldn't even want to hear of anybody taking over for David, as long as David is alive, we don't want to hear of another king. So the Meraglim went elsewhere. They didn't tell them anything. But they did it very carefully, going and seeing who they could count on to back Avshalom. So that was the second thing. First thing is doing it in Hebron. The second idea is sending out these meraglim. And even the people who are in on this secret didn't know exactly who's involved and when it's going to happen. They were just confided in it. It was a sleeper cell. It was just, they knew that when the time comes, they're going to get up to hear the shofar blow. They're going to say, Molech Avshalom v'chevron. Ves Avshalom, Holchu Masayim Ish Yerushalayim. With Avshalom, 200 men went from Yerushalayim. Kruim, they were invited. V'holchim l'sumam, and they went in their innocence. They didn't even know why they were going. V'lo yodu kol davar, and they knew nothing. They went along, and they didn't even know why what they were doing. And there were 200 of them. Rashi brings down Mefurish b'Masecha Soita Yerushalmis, it's Yerushalmi Gemara, Shebikesh Me Aviv, Avshalom asked David, Sheyichtov lo, that David HaMelech should write down, Shekol Shnei B'nei Adam Sheyvakesh, Sheyelchu Imoy, any two people that Avshalom asks to accompany him, Yelchu should go. As he asked for a letter from David, he's traveling to Hebron. He wants to make sure he has people who will go with him the whole way. David should just write down any two people that Avshalom asks to accompany have to go along with him. So he would show that paper to two people and they would join him. And then he went further. And he showed it to another two people. Now the other two people he showed it to didn't realize that the first two were also shown the same paper. The Chayin Harvey, and this happened with a lot of people. He kept on going around and showing him that David HaMelech would like to, whoever's shown this paper, any two people that are shown this paper, should go with Avshalom. And they figured the other people were going along just, maybe they happened to be on the road to Hebron, maybe they were going with Avshalom for some other reason, but the paper said, if he asks two people to go, you should go. And so he asked me and my friend, the two of us. So if we're asked, we have to go. So with this trickery, he had 200 men, Kruim, who were invited. They were invited by David on this letter. V'holchim l'sumam, and yet they were going in innocence. They didn't even know what they were going for. V'lo yodu kol davar, they knew nothing. They didn't realize that Avshalom was planning any rebellion. So now, besides the Gneva's Das, the fact that Avshalom fooled all the people coming to, who thought they were coming to Bezdin, and he said how he cares for them, and he wants to help them out, and there was a whole Gneva's Das in that regard. There's also Gneva's David, first of all from David. Avshalom was fooling David that he wants to go to Hebron, and the whole purpose is to bring a carbon, and really he was planning a rebellion. And it's a Gneva's Das from all of these people. That these people thought they were following what David said, any two people have to go with Avshalom. And he, with this trickery, had an entourage of 200 people. Whereas Avshalom Hochel Masayim Ishi had his 200 people from Yerushalayim. And there was a fourth part to this conspiracy. He did it in Hebron. He sent Baraglim through the country that to find out who his supporters are. He had a group of 200 men going with him to Hebron, showing that he obviously, everyone thought that the other people were approving of what's going to happen. So he had 200 people who were backing him up. And Vayishlach Avshalom es Achisofel Hagiloni. Avshalom sent Achitofel, which we're going to hear about more later. Avshalom sent Achitofel, who is the Yoetz David, David's advisor, Meiro, from his city, Megilo from Gilo. Achitofel lived in Gilo, which was near Yerushalayim, and Avshalom sent him from his city. And it doesn't say where he sent him. The simple meaning could be he sent him from his city, he just told Achitofel, go somewhere, take a hike, leave your city. And he was the son of the king, and he sent Avshalom from his city. So Achitofel left. And when David HaMelech is going to need an idea, what should he do? Achitofel won't be around. Achitofel was the Yoetz David, and we'll see later on, his advice was always the best advice, and Achitofel would not be there to help David. He sent him Meiro Megilo from his city, from Gilo. When he shechted, when he slaughtered the sacrifices, he sent Achitofel away. So at the time of the rebellion, Achitofel would not be in Gilo. It could also be that he brought Achitofel with him, and we'll see how Achitofel helped him out. Achitofel knew exactly when Nosson had told David that from David's household somebody would arise against him. Achitofel knew that. Achitofel was the Yoetz David, he was the advisor. Achitofel knew that there was going to be a rebellion. And that the Novi said there would be a rebellion. And Achitofel would be the one who would hopefully back him up. So he sent Achitofel from his house, could be brought Achitofel at this point to be with him. Vayi Akesher Amitz. And the conspiracy was very powerful. It was now a strong, all the factors were coming together. It was going to be a very strong rebellion. V'ha'am holich v'rov esav sholem. And the people was just constantly growing and growing. The crowd that was with Avshalom. He had this chanifus for the people. As he told them all what they wanted to hear and that he was cared for them. He had the group that was just accompanying him without even knowing where they were accompanying him. And in Hebron, which is the place where they would make the king, where they made the David king, he was putting all this into effect, and now he was going to get Achitofel on his side. Achitofel, as we mentioned back in Shmuel Aleph, Achitofel was actually the grandfather of Bathsheba. And even though there was a certain logic we could imagine that he would want his granddaughter was actually married to David. And his great-grandson would be the next king, Shlomo HaMelech. But with all that, it seems that Achitofel perhaps had, because of the fact that Bathsheba was initially taken when she had been married to Uriah, could be Achitofel still had this grudge and this anger against David that we're going to see he's going to be willing to change and switch allegiance. So Avshalom now gets Achitofel, who is the advisor of David, and he's ready to start the rebellion. Vayavo HaMagid. The one who brought the report came. El David Lamar to David saying, Hayalev Ish Yisrael Achrei Avshalom. The heart of all the Jewish people, everyone's heart is after Avshalom. And he doesn't even say that it was rebellion. Could be at this point it wasn't yet that it was a rebellion. Could be even when Avshalom would announce that he's the king. Again, could be he's not rebelling against David, just he's taking a step. He figures David is going to make somebody else the heir. Somebody else, Shlomo, will take over the throne. He would like to step into that place. But he doesn't even describe it as a rebellion. And perhaps if David would have made peace with it, and David would have sent the letter to Avshalom and said, sure, why are you jumping the gun? Of course you're going to be the king. You're my oldest son. Could be everything would have ended peacefully. But of course David knew that Shlomo was supposed to be the king. The Navi had told him Shlomo would be the one to build the Beis HaMikdash. And David did not accept. And he knew that he's going to have a son who was going to rebel against him. Vayomer David l'chol avodav. David said to all of his servants, Asher ito b'Yerushalayim, that were with him in Yerushalayim, Kumu, let's get up, v'nivrocha, and flee. Kilo siya lanu fleitzo mipnei Avshalom. We will not be able to escape because of Avshalom. If we hang around, Avshalom might catch us. Now, it doesn't say if he catches them, what will happen. Could be he'll put them in prison. We could imagine it is a good chance he would kill them, but it's not clear exactly what would happen, but we won't escape from Avshalom. Maharu lo leches, hurry to go, pen yemayer v'yisigonu, lest Avshalom hastens v'yisigonu, and he'll catch us v'diach aleinu es hara, and he'll thrust on us all of the evil, or he'll give us a punishment. It could be, after all, David had been pursuing after Avshalom, or Avshalom was afraid of being pursued. For 2 years, Avshalom was hiding out in Geshur because he didn't want David to catch him. Now, all of a sudden, Avshalom, the tables are turned. Avshalom is proclaiming himself as the king. Maybe he'll catch us. V'diach aleinu es kol hara, and he'll pay us back, mida k'neged mida, that he felt that I was after him, and now he'll turn after, against us. And it could be he'll strike the city by the blade of the sword. Or I don't know if he would kill David or not, but he'll kill the whole city. It could be he'll wipe out the whole city. It could be he'll wipe out the city and he'll say that Yerushalayim is backing David HaMelech, and anybody who's backing, who's standing in his way, will be killed. And David maybe he'd throw into jail. I don't know exactly, but exactly how Avshalom, again, it's just, it's hard to hear how Avshalom was. Again, it could be that's all part of this Einish of David, that even though it doesn't seem to make sense and it seems highly improbable, but that was all part of David HaMelech's punishment that would happen. But here you can have a king like David HaMelech, who was known as such a tzaddik and is such a popular king and had everything going for him, and all of a sudden Avshalom's able to turn around and take over the throne, and now he's in danger for his life. Behiko ir l'fi charav, and he'll strike the city by the sword. Yerushalayim is also the place where the Kidrug happened. David's mistake with Bathsheba happened. The king was in his palace and he saw her. That was where the Aveira, that's where David HaMelech made his mistake. It was in Yerushalayim. And whatever Kidrug, whatever accusing forces there are in Shemayim that say that David deserves a punishment, Yerushalayim is not the good place for him to be. Because Yerushalayim is a constant reminder of what he did in Yerushalayim. And therefore, could be that was another reason why the Me'am Lois brings down why David wanted to flee and get out of Yerushalayim. And you see David's concern. David tells the people again, his concern is, why are we running away? Because maybe he'll catch us and he'll end up killing the whole city. His concern is, who's going to be killed? The city. Vayomer avdei hamelech el hamelech. The servants of the king say to the king, Kechol asher yivchar adoni hamelech. Whatever my master the king chooses, hinei avadecha. Behold, hinei means that we're here, we're ready, we're at your beck and call. Hinei avadecha, we are your servants. So everyone, David HaMelech's servants are with him, and they'll back him up, and whatever David HaMelech wants to do, they're with him. Vayetze HaMelech v'chol beiso. The king and his whole household left Beraglav on foot. They didn't go on horseback. They didn't, the Ralbag says he didn't ride on horses. Kadesh lo yisparsem lechto. He didn't want to publicize the fact that he was leaving. Perhaps he was hoping something could be worked out. Avshalom obviously wanted to be king. Maybe they could work out something. But he left on foot. He didn't make a major scene. Vayazov HaMelech Es Eser Noshim Pilagshim. The king abandoned his 10 women he left behind. 10 women who were the Pilagshim, the concubines, not the full-fledged wife. But he left behind the Pilagshim Lishmar HaBoyz to guard the house. Could be he figured he will, they'll work out something, he'll be coming back. He left on foot. Could be he figured he wasn't in danger that Avshalom would chase after him to kill him. Obviously, you can't run that quickly without the horses. But his point was he left as if to show Avshalom. Avshalom can go into Yerushalayim. He's leaving Avshalom to take over the throne. Vayetze HaMelech v'chol ha'am baraglov. The king went out for Cholham, and all of the people were Baraglov accompanying him. Vayamdu beis hamerchok, and they stood in the house at a distance. They left Yerushalayim, and they gathered in the central location. And then they'll plan their next move, and we'll see in Yirtz Hashem next week what happens. For sponsorship opportunities, please call 718-436-3024. Thank you.